Here's Andy Udman.
We need to fix our number one health problem, and that is addiction. We have been turning a blind eye to this this dramatic epidemic that's going on in society today because in most people's mind, addiction is a dirty word, and it's incurable.
I remember many times sitting there trying to understand a life without drugs and alcohol, and I couldn't even grasp it.
Number one addiction, I'd say, is sugar. Number two would be caffeine. Number three would be prescription drugs.
For me, I have been in the field of treatment for addiction for several years, well, for almost 10 in traditional treatment. And I saw that the relapse rates were so high and experienced it as a counselor, that the relapse rates were so high, it really bothered me.
I said, okay, because I figured I'd be miserable without drugs and alcohol. But I figured, okay, I'll be miserable without drugs and alcohol, because it's better than being miserable with drugs and alcohol. But never in my wildest dreams did I think I'd get the gifts that I got today.
The book was on the New York Times bestselling list, written by our own Pam Colleen. Addiction, the hidden epidemic. Pam Colleen is in studio this morning. Let's look at addictions, Pam.
Mm-hmm.
What's the number one addiction in North America?
I'd say it's sugar.
Sugar.
I'd say it's sugar, yeah. And it really can set us up for a lot of health problems, including mood disorders, if people are addicted to sugar.
Number two?
Second to that would be caffeine, I think. Coffee, a lot of caffeine and one cup of coffee. And unfortunately, you know, we're pounding back the caffeine, you know, because of all these Tim Hortons and Starbucks and caffeinated beverages on the market today. We are addicted to caffeine. It's probably about 80% of the population that's using caffeine on a regular basis.
I'm imagining someone coming from another planet and flying over Canada at a low level and going, what are all those lineups? Well, that's to get coffee. Why the lineups for coffee? Because
mm-hmm.
we're addicted.
Yeah, it's an addiction. And people are painting caffeine as a relatively benign and safe drug. And, you know, compared to cocaine, I'm sure it is. But it's still very depleting in terms of how it can compromise your adrenal glands.
Okay, so sugar.
Mm-hmm.
And nicotine.
Mm-hmm. And prescription drugs are a growing concern, obviously. There are a lot of people addicted to prescription drugs today. Everything from the opiates to God knows what. You know, there's all sorts of drugs out there that are manipulating the mood. And as long as a drug manipulates mood, it has the potential for addiction. And there are thousands of prescription drugs on the market today, as we know.
Alcohol.
Alcohol's way up there. Very big problem today. Still, even with our youth, binge drinking is actually worse today than it was when I was a crazy young person.
So you're still sticking with the notion that we are sicker,
yeah,
fatter,
mm-hmm.
and more depressed than ever.
Yes, and since mood disorders are a leading risk factor in terms of developing addiction, we need to keep our moods level in order to help ward off the possibility of becoming addicted.
Don Drummond in his report yesterday, and I want to refer to that several times in this hour, because the health budget is the monster that we're dealing with. I thought he was going to say, you know, I was listening to Andy and Pam said that Deb Matthews there in London, Ontario, should listen up and learn that the solution to many of our health issues is better nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't say that.
No, they won't even mention the word nutrition and health. It's really quite a shame. We have to, my book was basically a call to action. We have to change this problem from a grassroots level up, because I don't see it changing down from the top down anytime soon. Even within our justice system, our legal system, I mean, we need to start seeing why people are so violent, why people are so angry today, and we know that food will affect their mood. So I even have in my book a section about somebody in California, Carolyn Rubin, who's seen tremendous success in the court system by helping inmates, people who have just been released from prison, putting them on a nutritional protocol and seeing lower recidivism rates and so on. So,
folks, are you listening mm-hmm. to what you're hearing? This is absolutely dynamic stuff. I worked in a prison for a year. That this was never even thought of, that
no.
nutrition might be a factor
mm-hmm.
in these people's problems.
That's right. We don't need, Harper needs to understand, we don't need bigger prisons today. We need to look at real rehabilitation in terms of getting these people well so that they're running on all eight cylinders.
You know what? Why don't we take a break right now? And then we have a very special guest that Pam Killeen is just, buttons are coming off her shirt. She's so eager to introduce our special guest this morning on this very topic. And we're going to keep the phone lines open. 643-1290, back in just a moment with Stan Stokes. Very interesting chapter interview you had with him in your book, Addiction, the Hidden Epidemic. We'll be back with Pam and Stan in just a moment right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
I remember many times sitting there trying to understand a life without drugs and alcohol, and I couldn't even grasp it. I said, okay, because I figured I'd be miserable without drugs and alcohol. But I figured, okay, I'll be miserable without drugs and alcohol, because it's better than being miserable with drugs and alcohol. But never in my wildest dreams did I think I'd get the gifts that I got today.
Health and wellness coach Pam Killeen in studio with Andy Udman. And Pam, you have a very special guest this morning.
That's right. I'm so thrilled that Stan Stokes is able to join us this morning. He's the president and CEO of a treatment facility down in Virginia. It's called Bridging the Gaps. And welcome, Stan. I'm so glad you could join us today.
Nice to be here. Nice to have heard what you've already said this morning, especially about sugar.
Well, we're getting you across the border without the body search, so we're off to a good start already, Stan. Stan, we're talking about addictions. That's what you do.
The last 37 years, yes, that's what I do.
What's the most serious addiction in North America?
Well, the one the hardest, as far as I'm concerned, truly, and this may sound crazy in a way, is sugar.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think it sets us up for a lot of problems in terms of our physical and mental health. In fact, Dr. Robert Lustig published an article recently about sugar in Nature magazine, and basically said that sugar is costing our economy into the tens of billions of dollars every year in terms because of the health problems it causes.
In what way are we addicted to sugar, Mr. Stokes?
Well, in what way? In every way, pretty much. Can you think of an event that you could go to that probably, if it's for grieving, for celebrating, for anything you can think of, can you think of an event? In fact, I just visited a treatment center recently, and guess what was the first thing in their lobby as you walk in the door?
Chocolates?
Well, there was a special machine that had every kind of coffee, cappuccino, everything, and then there was this rack with a complete rack with all the different names like Nabisco and so forth, with all of the supposed to be health bars, but if you look on the side of them, there's about 5 to 6 types of sugar in it, along with chocolate and so forth.
Hasn't the company figured out a way to put broccoli or cauliflower in fancy little packages that people fight over?
Well, if they do, it'll have sugar in it. I can promise you that.
Now, Stan, maybe you can start explaining to our listeners what makes your facility stand out. What is so unique about the treatment that you do at your clinic?
Well, what is critical, and I do a talk that's called The Third Leg of the Stool, and the third leg of the stool is the physiology of addiction. And I want to emphasize that we do not have a magic bullet here or anywhere that I know of, even though there are programs that are advertising to have cures. I don't know of one for addiction. But here's the point. If you are trying to talk your way out of a disease that now the National Institute of Drug Abuse and all other ACAM, which is for the folks that are doing more alternative treatments, if you cannot talk to yourself, if it's a brain disease, that you have to get that brain chemistry balanced. And first, you have to determine if it's out of balance. So the way we start, and really from a scientific way, we use a particular thing called a triad profile guide, which is by Metametrics, which is a laboratory. And what you're looking for is you're looking to learn if the amino acids are out of balance. See, if you don't have the energy production or the nervous system function and correct, if you have not been able to determine if they're toxins so that you can eliminate them, if you're not looking to see if there's cellular damage and how the nutrients are metabolized, how are you going to get the person so they can even hear what you're trying to convey in therapy? Because in the 37 years I've been involved, I got out of the mainstream because I could not stand to watch the people just, it's called a revolving door. that they would go out and they would relapse large numbers within 90 days.
Stan, you're big on the word relapse. When it comes to addictions, what success rate do we generally see in North America when it comes to addictions to things like alcohol and prescription drugs and sugar?
You can go to just any, pretty much anywhere to look at the research. It's 80% and higher relapse rates. If you go out over to 5 years, you only get about 5% in traditional treatment. If you look at the programs that have done the research in the field of integrative type treatments, you can get as high as 65 to 80% recovery rates, at least.
Do you know Alcoholics Anonymous? Do they ever publish a figure what their success rate is in treating addiction?
Because of the nature of Alcoholics Anonymous, they don't publish, but they do allow and have allowed in the past surveys, and they certainly say less than 50%. In fact, I think the later surveys were even lower.
And now, I've read the 12 steps many times. Is there anything in there about 3 square meals a day?
The AA itself is not based. In fact, if you read in the kind of the folklore, is that if you're having a craving, is to have some honey, have some candy bar, and so forth. Most people do not know that the co-founder of Alcoholics Anonymous, Bill Wilson, got into nutrition not too long before his death. He was actually treated, and because of his depression, he was depressed most of his recovery. And he particularly was looking at B3 and sent out, and they're actually, you can still obtain them, letters to doctors that were treating alcoholics saying, please use B3 to help with depression. And it had to be separate from, he actually set up a separate corporation to get this message out. Unfortunately, because of his death, and of course what helped kill Bill Wilson was cigarettes, and he stopped too late.
Now, Stan, you can't talk somebody out of an addiction when their physiology is weak, when their biochemistry is a mess. People may abstain from a substance like alcohol or street drugs or what have you, but they don't feel well still. And your goal,
that's
my goal,
exactly
is to get...
That's exactly what happened in my case. Mm-hmm. I went through treatment, and 5 years later, I was both relapsing, and since I'm retired, I was also in the Air Force running addiction treatment center and relapsing. And that tells you the power of addiction. And the point is, as you were just saying, Pam, is that if you do not feel well, if your mood swings, I think I told you in my interview, is that if you're feeling like you're a crazy person in this way, your moods are going up and down, and of course you don't know it, but you're all of a sudden doing a huge amount of caffeine and nicotine and sugar, I would have been diagnosed as bipolar, as so many alcoholics and addicts are being diagnosed with bipolar today. So what I didn't know was what I needed to do, and no one could tell me. I had to go seek out nutrition to find out about hypoglycemia, which is low blood sugar, which if you read the research, about 80%+ have reactive hypoglycemia that are alcoholics, and it's right there in the research. It's not hidden. Then you have to start looking at hypoglycemia. You have to start looking at stress levels, your sugar intake, your nicotine intake, all these different things.
Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, in the mainstream world, whether it's a medical doctor or a therapist, they don't acknowledge hypoglycemia or blood sugar control.
That's absolutely correct. There's very few doctors, even in 2012, that will even talk to an alcoholic about or even believes in hypoglycemic for addicts and alcoholics.
Stan, that's outrageous. Why is that?
I think that the bottom line is when you're taught in school, you go to 12 years of school or longer to go through all that it takes to be a doctor and so forth. And then people, and you're taught in there that is less those values, and there's documented cases that you can do a 5 or 6 hour glucose tolerance test. And there's documented cases of people literally passing out during the test. But the levels were such accepted within the parameters that's considered normal, then they say, well, there's nothing wrong. There was something else. They develop their levels that they say is normal, and if it's not within that, no matter what the person does, if they are ranting, raving, passed out, whatever, they'll say that it's normal.
Stan, we're coming down to the bottom of the hour. We're going to have to take a short news break. But before we do that, I want to ask you, I asked you what is the top addiction in North America. You said sugar. Let's just complete the list. Let's make it five, the five top five addictions in North America.
Well, I can tell you one thing that's really rising, and that's the opiates. I tell you, that in the 30s, well, especially the last 10 years, it's incredible. So alcohol is certainly next, after sugar. And as far as I'm concerned, you certainly see marijuana, but it's not the highest. You will see the opiates, the prescription drugs, are just an epidemic in this country right now. It may even be the top. I do not know. I have not seen statistics.
And in that category, what is the top drug?
Oxycontin. Absolutely Oxycontin.
Yeah.
That's what we're seeing all the time, all ages. Mom, who's a housewife and hurt herself, to the college kid. It's rampant among the whole group, as far as I can see. That's what we're seeing.
And where are we headed if we don't find a solution, Stan Stokes?
If we do not get both about the sugar and the nutrition, with what's going on with obesity and everything for our kids and adolescents, along with what we're doing to our seniors who are on 11 to 15 drugs typically, and with the prescription rates going up, I'm trying to remember that figure was like 500 times the what it was even 20 years ago around the prescription drugs. And what's scary, you know what the most scary thing is to me? Is the way the prescription drugs are invading addiction treatment centers.
Mm-hmm.
That is, doing this 37 years, it is scary to me. I just met with a guy that went through 7 months of treatment, who's supposed to be the hardest core program in the United States for relapse people, and he had to beg them to not put him on drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And that just drives me crazy.
And you say, no, 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 not drugs. Look for the solution in blank.
Nutrition.
When they walk through the door, we're telling people that there are options. And of course, certain drugs we will not even take the person in unless they absolutely agree to come off of. Any of the benzodiazepines, in other words, like Xanax or all the ones that are to help with anxiety, any of the families, there's only two families of drugs or two groups of drugs that will kill you in withdrawal, and that's the benzodiazepine and alcohol. Those are the only two.
Well, it's information we really, really need to hear, and it certainly goes counter to what so many people think. I mean, most people do not even raise the topic of nutrition when it comes to so many of these addictions. Stan, if you want to stand by, and Pam, we're going to take a short break, back with Stan Stokes and Pam Killeen, author of The Great Bird Flu Hoax, which was on the New York Times bestseller list, and the book we're focusing on today, Addiction, the Hidden Epidemic. Back in just a moment right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJVK.
For me, I have been in the field of treatment for addiction for several years, for almost 10, in traditional treatment. And I saw that the relapse rates were so high, and experienced it as a counselor, that the relapse rates were so high, it really bothered me.
What do these names have in common to you? Whitney Houston. Elvis Presley, Marilyn Monroe, Heath Ledger, Michael Jackson. Pam? What do they have in common?
All drug-related deaths, unfortunately, very sadly, very tragically, all very preventable. But it's a sign of the times, unfortunately. It's happening to the little guy. It's happening to people who are celebrities. This problem is a growing problem. It is indeed our number one health problem. There are more deaths and disability disabilities today from substance abuse and from any other cause. People think that our number one problems in terms of our health are going to be things like cancer, heart disease, diabetes. Well, indeed, addiction, or rather substance abuse, is our number one health problem. It's costing the Canadian economy about $40 billion every year. In the United States, it's costing them about $500 billion every single year.
We're in conversation not only with Pam Killeen, but also Stan Stokes, who's the CEO and president of Bridging the Gaps, which is an addiction treatment clinic outside of Washington, D.C. Stan, let me ask you, did you happen to see the interview with Whitney Houston? And I believe her funeral is set for Saturday, private funeral. Did you happen to see the interview that Diane Sawyer did with her back in 2002?
I did not, but I heard about it, and what really concerns me, just like they've reported, they've at least found six different drugs that were in her room, including Valium and Xanax and Lorazepam, that they're now seeing what kind of, until the toxicology reports come back, they won't know how much was in the system.
What are those drugs, and what would they have done for Whitney Houston?
Well, both Xanax is one of the benzodiazepines, as I was talking about. Valium is what we just call solid alcohol. It's still used in places for withdrawal from alcohol. And lorazepam, they're looking for anxiety, and these, they're looking to knock down the anxiety, and the Valium would help her if this is a huge if, I have no knowledge of this, if someone is addicted to alcohol and they don't want alcohol or they can't get to alcohol during the daytime, people take Valium so that they don't go into withdrawal if they're addicted.
We were talking about the death of Whitney Houston, and people were calling the talk show and saying, but she had such a stressful life. And I said, I'm sure to her it was stressful, but I said, I think of my parents during the war sneaking food from the countryside into the city in Holland in 44, 45 when the Dutch were starving and knowing they'd be shot if they were caught doing it. Then the whole immigration process. We don't even know how to spell stress today. And yet, Stan Stokes, we're more addicted today to things that give us relief from stress than our parents could even imagine. Of course, they didn't have these options. But why does someone like Whitney Houston, with all the success in her life, need Valium and Xanax and all these other pills?
I think it's a little different. I would not use the term need. I would say this: if you've got a combination of the genetic markers, and many of us do, and please understand it. Like in my case, my grandfather had the issue. My father never drank or anything. But if it jumps generations into the next family, which it jumped into mine, and if you have the propensity, and then you are, of course, in this culture, you will always come across as far as alcohol and sugar and all the other things, and you find that they absolutely stimulate your neurotransmitters and you feel better and you're under stress and you're feeling depressed or anxious and you take something that makes you feel better and you are not using other avenues, because in our society, you don't see on the television typically, gee, if you're having stress, go out and run, or go out and meditate. You see, take a pill.
It was interesting
to use something.
It was interesting to me that Whitney Houston, in that interview with Diane Sawyer, said that during all these problems she had with her husband and so on, she had terrible eating habits and basically didn't eat or just ate terrible food. Might that have been a key factor?
It is a key factor. It is a factor because of this. What we find typically with the people that are admitted to our program, almost none of the folks eat breakfast. It's when you have the longest time that your system is without any nutrition. So if you're not eating, I mean, that's one. And you know, that's if you're old enough to remember that your parents or grandparents was always eat your breakfast, or your school teachers, breakfast is your most important meal. People who become addicted tend to not eat breakfast. It's just a marker. It's one of the things that we see in most of our clients. They do not eat breakfast, and they have terrible eating habits.
Okay, so let me ask you this, just before we get to Catherine. Catherine, we're going to get to you in just a second. If Whitney Houston, through all that turmoil, had been able to eat three good, wholesome, nutritional meals every day, might she still be alive?
It certainly would have helped, but I would also add that if Whitney Houston would have had the opportunity may not be right, but certainly had been exposed to getting her brain chemistry balanced by IV amino acids, by having some testing done that would show that her thyroid was possibly an issue or her hormones were possibly an issue, that she could have started balancing her brain chemistry, I would say she would be alive today.
Terrific. Let's go to the phone lines now. Catherine, you have a comment.
Yes. You opened the show talking about the impact of nutrition on children and the impact of nutrition on people in the institutional prison system. I guess my interest is in seniors and what's happening to seniors who are living in nursing homes who don't have the opportunity to eat outside of that institution, and the amount of drugs that a number of those seniors are on. Maybe that would be a good thing for Pam to possibly talk about. Probably not today because there's not time.
No.
That issue, cause that's
it's a huge issue.
Catherine, yeah. Let me bounce it to Pam. By the way, is this a personal issue for you? Do you have a loved one?
My mother's dead now. She died last year. But it was an issue, and I tried to sort of address it, but they said they have X number of dollars per resident per meal, and I find out that it's almost half of what a prisoner would get in a jail situation. And that, to me, is unconscionable, that our seniors are being fed inadequate food and nutrition, and our prisoners are getting better quality food.
Catherine, let me make a quick comment, and then I'll make comment, and then I'll bounce it to Pam. There was a superintendent of a school system outside of Lansing, Michigan, who asked that his schools be declared prisons for exactly the reason that you said, because the inmates were getting the funding for better food than the children in our schools were. But let me bounce your concern first to Pam and then to Stan. Go ahead.
That's
Pam.
Right. We did an entire show on this, Andy. You remember several months ago, and we had some whistleblowers come on the show that work in the nursing homes who are appalled by what seniors are being fed today. One of them said she wouldn't even taste the food. It was so abysmal. I mean, she just couldn't stand the fact that she was a part of that system. So, yes, you're absolutely right. Here in Ontario, at least, the people in nursing homes may get about $7 per person per day as funding. Prisoners here in Ontario get about $12 per person per day. So, yeah, absolutely. And within that $7, of course, that does include things like Ensure, which, of course, is a terribly substandard. I wouldn't even call it a food.
Right.
And so then you see what Stan talked about earlier, is, you know, a lot of these people, unfortunately, are put on a lot of medications, and really what they're dealing with is brain starvation.
Stan, your comment.
It was really intriguing. Last night, as I was going out of my building, we have a meeting, what is called, for medical folks, and he happens to be a nurse that went through our program, and here's what's intriguing. I said, well, how are you doing? He says, I'm in the toughest job I've ever had in my career as a nurse, and it spans two decades. He is working in a nursing home. He has 66 residents, 16 of them with dementia and so forth. He said, Stan, this is the toughest job I've ever had, and with what I know about nutrition, it is appalling. And just exactly what you're saying, what they're eating and the fact of the number of drugs they're on. I think I saw a survey not too long ago, 11 to 15 drug is the average for our seniors in nursing homes in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Stan, we had, Pam and I, during one of our discussions, Catherine, I got a question for you in just a moment. We invited people to call, and we had this fellow, I'll never forget him, he called, and he started taking the pills out of his medicine cabinet, and he was reading all these big labels, and he had 23 different kinds of pills in his medicine cabinet. He didn't know what half of them were for. Surely he's unique. That's not common, is it?
I would say it is. Can you still hear me, Andy?
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, I worked in home care for 16 years. I won't tell you for which agency, but I did a lot of home care, and lots of these seniors had as many as 10 or 12 different medications that they had to take two or three times, some of them even four times a day. So they were ingesting up to 30 or 35 pills a day with maybe 12 prescription medications.
Mm. Wow.
I mean, it's just shocking. And so is that not costing our health care system money? Because
it's bankrupting.
They're overdosed, they're drugged, they're falling down, they're confused. I mean, I just think Pam I just wish we could get her to work at the health unit, for God's sakes.
Well, we're bankrupting. Listen, I have my nutrition series on right now, what I call my nutrition boot camp, and I don't see anybody from public health or from the medical schools coming to my classes. And what I'm teaching is very, very basic and would save, if people could learn these basic nutritional principles, we could save our healthcare system billions of dollars every year.
Catherine, isn't it outrageous that we are facing the kind of situation that Don Drummond painted yesterday? And an absolute, in fact, one of the absolute key components is healthcare costs. And here is Pam Colleen and a host of experts like Stan Stokes saying nutrition, nutrition, nutrition is key to dealing with some of these health issues. And our health officials, you have the dictocrats, what did you call it?
The dietary dictocrats.
They're not listening.
Well, they want to put money into big pharma to give people drugs, but they won't support vitamin supplements, nutritionists. They won't support the naturopath, whom we try to go to get our information from, rather than our regular doctor. I mean, I use him for a few things because you need some blood work done.
Absolutely.
And thank God for Dr. Oz. I had my vitamin D tested last year, and they told me I was going to have to pay for it. I said, I don't care. I want it done. I was subclinically low.
Mm-hmm. Catherine, we have to leave it there because we have so many other people who want to weigh in on this. Ron, thanks for waiting.
No problem. Here's an interesting thing around the addiction thing. I'm a former public information representative for one of the anonymous fellowships out there. And as part of that, I had to go in and talk with the nursing programs up at Western and Fanshawe. One of the questions, there were two questions that I would ask them. I would ask the class if they knew how long it took for alcohol to come out of the system. Out of a class of 100, not one hand went up. My next question was, does anybody know what Ativan was? And everybody's hand went up. Now, how that ties together, the doctor at the other end in California would know that, is that in our emergency rooms, if somebody's coming in with acute alcohol withdrawal, i.e. seizures and DTs and things like that, they will whack them full of Ativan to slow the brain down and to control the seizures.
Okay.
What that does, though, is it creates an instant blackout. And it takes 72 hours to get the booze out of the system. Now, that's point number one, which is the lack of education for the students. It's now one of the exam questions. Thank God there were some open-minded people up there at Western that got that into the questions. It hasn't changed the practical end of it at the eMERGE yet. Now, here's the second one. A guy that I had some interaction with a few weeks ago is coming off of crystal meth. He's got severe paranoia going on, and they get him on I think it was Xanax they put him on, or I'm pretty sure it was Xanax. Anyway, it doesn't matter what the brand was, but they put him on another one. But here was the treatment plan for him. It was to get him onto that. They kept him in eMERGE for 4 days, okay, because he was chained down, to get him to the methadone clinic as a treatment for coming off of something that only takes a couple of days to get out of his system.
Okay,
so
give us pharmaceutical
to treat something that there is no physical dependency created by, but it's their own lack of education up at the front end of the problem. The biggest drug problem on the street, Oxycontin, mm-hmm. And we are not talking about that stuff.
No, and unfortunately, doctors aren't trained to identify, you know, the addiction, and they're putting out these drugs like candy, and they don't know how to get people off of them.
Ron, we have to leave it there. John, go ahead.
Yes, I am interested in what you're talking about today. I do work as a personal support worker in home health care, so I do see a lot of problems, particularly with seniors.
You'll have to be quick, John. Go ahead.
One of the biggest problems, I think, is that we don't educate ourselves and our seniors on how to talk to doctors. Doctors tend to treat the symptoms, and then people tend to be over-medicated when they don't really need it. A lot of seniors, they'll eat food that is out of date, and then they'll complain about stomach problems, and they'll be given pills for that stomach problems when all we have to do is change their eating habits.
That's right.
Wow, bang on. Short break. We'll be back with a summary with Stan Stokes and Pam Colleen right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
London.
Oh, my. If you could hear the things we talk about during the break. Just showing Pam Colleen this article in the London Free Press a couple of days ago, which I've had so much reaction to, the rise of Ritalin. And Pam, that got you going on the fact that here we are in Wellington Road, a few hundred meters from this new psychiatric hospital.
Right, and millions of dollars going into building this new psychiatric hospital. And none of these people need to be there in the first place. If they just understood good nutrition, they could be mentally stable and wouldn't need to go into these hospitals. And unfortunately, our healthcare system doesn't identify this very important connection.
Stan Stokes, some concluding words, if you would, about the importance of nutrition in the context of all of our addictions and all of our health issues.
I would really like to give a ray of hope. I would like to mention the Alliance for Addiction Solutions.org, which any of your listeners can go to and look at for information and get different things and become better educated as to what is going on. The thing, again, I'd like to emphasize, it was mentioned earlier that we need to educate ourselves as individuals and as professionals. And this group, which is people like Pam from Canada and all over, like England and South Africa, and we have members that are all over the country, this country and others, that they could learn from. And so if they just, I mean, it's free. They can go to the Alliance for Addiction Solutions.org and obtain a lot of, our whole thing is promoting drug-free brain repair for addictions. I want to emphasize that, drug-free brain repair for addictions. And they can also, if become a member, of course, if they're a professional or have specific interests, because this is a thing that will change. I don't believe our legislatures, I don't believe the people that are in power will change this. It will have to be a grassroots level, like people in your audience and different audiences around the world.
Well, you've certainly moved us in that direction, Stan Stokes, so I so much appreciate you joining us all the way from just outside Washington.
Winchester, Virginia.
Winchester.
And your website.
The home of Patsy Cline. The Civil War, actually during the Civil War, this little town changed hands over 70 times.
Wow.
It's quite an interesting little town.
Stan, we have to leave it there. We thank you so much for your time, Pam Killeen.
I'm teaching my nutrition boot camp for the next two Saturdays at Central Library from 1 till 5 in the afternoon, and my website is just my name, pamkillen.com. So I hope to see some people out there on Saturday.
One of these days, Brian Warshawski and Dr. Graham Pollitt are going to call you and say, Pam, we've had an epiphany. Come on down and work with us.
Let's hope so. I mean, there's too many lives at stake.
There absolutely are.
Mm-hmm.
They got to start listening.
Yeah, and our healthcare system is imploding. You know, we have to start looking for better solutions, and they're out there, folks.
Wow. Do yourself a favor and eat a really good lunch today, a nutritious lunch that sets you on the path toward good health. 11 o'clock news just around the corner.